Today I'm going to be talking eventually about, that gives you a warning that there's a preamble, or actually pre-rambling, about religion versus spirituality. And I put the verses in there intentionally. In most normal religions and religious movements, throughout the history of religion, Western religion, and even Eastern religion, the main conflicts have been between the spiritual and the material, as we went over a little bit in the Gospel According to Judas class on Tuesday. There's been an historic sense that there's a separation between the body and the spirit, between the material world, where eventually this wood rots and the chair falls apart, and the ideal Platonic world of chairness, and if he didn't envision pews, of pewness also, where you have the temporal and the material, which is subject to all of the vagaries of life, of fate, of aging, of disease, of deterioration, as opposed to things that we believe are perfect or eternal or at least should be. Plato certainly made the distinction probably more clearly than anyone else in talking about this world being a shadow, a reflection of an ideal world. His logic was impeccable, I suppose, in that he said, well, let's see, what's a chair? How do we know when we're talking about a chair? A chair is something you sit on. So I sit on this. I guess that could be a kind of chair. The bench is a kind of chair. Those things are a kind of chair, although at 45 minutes into the sermon, they could be instruments of torture also. So there are some things that are dependent on use and context. But he said, what do all of these things have in common? And that must be that we have an idea of chairness, and that is the perfect eternal form of the chair, as opposed to these things that we buy at IKEA and take home, and they tend not to be perfect or eternal. We have an intuitive sense, and probably a logical sense, that there's a difference between the material and the spiritual. We can normally, even without a medical examiner, tell a living creature from a dead creature, although with cats there can be a twilight zone, and there can be a twilight zone with people too. But at the end, we recognize that there's a difference between the meat of who we are and what, and when that possesses something called life. And most religious and philosophical persuasions have said there is this distinction. And most of them have said, look, we need to really honor that spiritual, and religions have had different attitudes towards material existence. I think the technical theological term is most religions consider the body to be yucky. That is, again, a term of art. Because it's not perfect, and how could it not be perfect if there is perfection and if it was created by a perfect God and in the Western religions, in the image of God, and what in the world does that mean? So you have in these traditions this idea of a disconnect between the body and the spirit, a disconnect between the physical urges and the more spiritual urges. You have it reflected in the Christian scriptures where Jesus says the spirit is willing but the flesh is weak. You have it reflected in Jewish mythology of Isaac Luria, who talks about God being pure light but a little frayed into material existence at its edges. You have it in the Hindu tradition as we move east, where there's a sense that, well, how are we going to reconcile the spiritual and the material? And they do it very cleverly by saying that the material is simply an illusion, and we are all really essentially spiritual beings, and we would understand that if only we could get past all of these apparent differences that keep us apart. And that's a philosophy and an attempt to reconcile that can have some good consequences. That's the great issue with which Western philosophy, Eastern and Western religions have wrestled. And it's almost not a part of the conversations that I hear among Unitarian Universalists. I have people coming to me all the time and saying, you know, I'm not religious, but I am spiritual. Now, that's a different conflict, or it at least appears to be a different conflict. And at first, I just kind of acted like I knew what they meant. Well, you know, I'm not religious, but I am very spiritual. And then I started thinking about what does that mean? Is this a distinction that I can really understand and accept? What does it mean to be spiritual, and what does it mean to be religious, and must they in fact be at odds? So I started talking to people about these distinctions, and what it seems to mean, and I understand it, and I'm not arguing against it, what it seems to mean is that some people, for some idea, have the idea that if you are religious, you must be superstitious, arrogant, condescending, and think that everybody that doesn't think and believe the way you do is a fool at best and a scoundrel at worst. If you accept that definition of what it is to be religious, I guess I'm not religious either. But I don't accept the premise. It is true that religions are often presented in ways that are arrogant, condescending, and intolerant. So are some political discussions. So are some arguments over movie reviews. So are the various ways that we human beings convey our own certainties and insecurities. And I would put it to you that it is not religion that is the problem. It is the fact of the projection of our own intolerance and insecurity. And I think intolerance and insecurity go together hand in hand. Realized beings, people whom I would consider in some ways to be holy people, people who really seem to have gotten the message in the Christian context, in the Jewish context, in the Muslim context, and I studied with a Muslim holy man when I lived in North Africa, they got it. They saw the bigger picture of humanity and not the minutiae of simple ritual or obedience or taking somebody else's word for what the words meant. I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. Well, I think that even people who say that I'm religious but not spiritual, another dichotomy, and I had to think about what that meant also, and what it meant was I am open to being with people who call themselves religious, but I don't buy the premise. I don't buy the theology. I'm not a believer. I just try to do the right thing. That's cool. I don't know how, in the West, we got into the idea that there was a separation between the religious and the spiritual. It seems to me, almost by definition, that everybody who's in this room on purpose, who wasn't just schlepped here by a spouse, a parent, or some other force greater than themselves in the moment, that everyone here kind of gets that there's a power in being together, that there's an energy and a buzz that is created when people are involved in a common cause to bring light, either spiritually or in fact real plugs and outlets and real trailers to real people, that the bringing of light to people, the bringing of food to people, the bringing of love and compassion to people is both religious and spiritual. I think it's important not to be confused with religion as simply those narrow systems around which people have organized, sometimes with open hearts and sometimes with closed hearts. That's not the definition of religion. Religion is to be bound up together in a caring community, in taking care, and that community can be as small as a household and as large as the world. It is that sense of connection one to another. And it doesn't have to have a theology. It doesn't have to have intolerance. It doesn't have to have arrogance and condescension. It can simply be caring. The two roots of the word religion in religare are to be bound up together. And the second is to care for each other. And it's easy to remember because the negative is negligere, to neglect. And so religion is not what somebody thinks about God or eternity. That may be one of the identifying characteristics of one group or sect. But religion is what we do in the world with and for each other. Spirituality is very important. Even for non-believers, spirituality is really important. Because what does that mean? What does it mean to be a non-believer? We recognize the difference between life and death. We recognize the difference between the bland and the spicy. There are people who would argue, I have no spiritual needs, because that's all fuzzy, superstitious stuff out there. Almost nobody here lives in a gray house without art. Almost nobody here, I'm just trying, maybe there's one, so I'm just saying, I don't know of the exception that proves the rule, but nobody whose house I have visited has lacked art on the wall, music playing somewhere, and people being open to being touched and transported by things that are more than simply what they call in the military service, three hots and a cot. We have dimensions that need to be fed and nourished by art, by dance, by music, ways that we are touched. I remember, and it may be a cultural product, but the first time I heard Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto in D, I had no context for it except I wept. There are times when a work of art, where something that is not simple logic and argumentation goes across the membranes that we use to keep ourselves, we think, safe, and touch us at some deep level and inform our hearts about how we really feel about each other, our family, our friends, our congregations, our society. That's religion and spirituality at its best. Aristotle wrote about forms of government and about democracy and said that every form of government can have an exaggeration on one side and an exaggeration on the other, both of which lead to tragedy. And it's hard to stay balanced. Democracy is wonderful, but democracy, if untended, if the voters stop caring and paying attention and being outraged or involved, can turn into oligarchy. On the other hand, if the voters become too involved and too emotionally labile, it can turn into a mob. He says to maintain a democracy is to try to work hard by paying attention to staying in balance. I think the same thing is true in religion. In the material versus the spiritual, it is not a good idea to hate the body, to hate material existence, to just see this as a sack of meat and to try to transcend it. I don't think it is a good idea to go all the way into the material either. You know, you're only alive today, do whatever you feel like doing. That's kind of a dated concept, and it doesn't really work for the emotional intimacy of people connecting on a deeper level. In terms of the spiritual and the religious, I think it's the same kind of battle to stay in balance for communities and for individuals. If your religious group is only about rules and rituals and obedience, you lose the heart of why you gathered together in the first place. It is possible, and in fact it is frequent, that religious institutions, as political institutions do sometimes, lose their way. And the institution and the survival and the flourishing of the institution becomes paramount, and it adumbrates the real core call of the faith. That does happen. But it's also true, I believe, that spirituality, if taken to an extreme, is simply narcissism. It is taking care of me. It is wondering about the fate of my soul and the health of my soul, and you guys work on it yourselves, and to hell with you. We have to try to find a balance between the institutional and the communal out there and our own desires and strengths, our own spiritual roots that nourish us, that inform us, that challenge us to continue to be bringers of the light. To understand that what we bring is spiritual food and real caloric food. That it is symbolic light and it is the real light. That it is the abstraction of a concept of love, and it is hands-on practicing loving each other. Doing justice, not simply believing in it. Loving mercy and walking humbly with whatever it is that informs our souls and keeps us in a sense of connection. And I guess it's that connection that makes up both religion and spirituality. It is the invisible threads that bind us together for a time in community, and the invisible threads that channel the energy that we have to stay involved in life when life is tough. To stay involved with each other when we can be prickly and difficult. To stay involved in the process of living and loving our world in its all too fallible and material and fragile nature. But still loving it. Because it is part of the fragility. It is part of its vulnerability. It is, as it is part of the vulnerability and fragility of each other, that makes us pay attention to what is going on in our world, in our families, and in our hearts today. As the poet Marvel said, if there were world enough and time enough, we could sit out a century or two. If the world were permanent and either hell or paradise, we could just step back and say, well, it's all hell out there, or it's a paradise and it doesn't need me. I think the fundamental religious and spiritual material connection is our knowledge that we need each other and our world needs us. It is the knowledge and the affirmation that as Unitarian Universalists we make that we do believe in something. We believe that our lives can make a difference, and we choose to try to make that a good difference. We believe that we are essentially responsible for the choices that we make. We believe that our world is worth the time of our tears and of our laughter and of our dancing and of our loving. We believe in this material world. And we believe in it with spiritual conviction. Conviction that on occasion is tested, but that's what makes any of our values and our relationships stronger. When we test them, when we ask, what is it that we mean to each other? What is it that our lives mean to the world? What is our connection to each other and to tomorrow? And we answer that not simply in songs or in ideas or in papers or essays. We answer it because service is our prayer. We have a religion that we don't have to believe in. We just have to do it. And as you do it, as Dan has, can I use the word testified? As Dan has testified, as you do it, as you practice your faith, you see it given back to you. And you see yourself renewed and recharged to engage life with and for each other another day.